Welcome to VCR, a vintage cinema rewind. We're bringing old movies to new viewers. I'm Blake.
And I'm Jason. Blake, you know, for that line of work, I thought you'd be bigger.
Gee, I've never heard that before.
Classic lines from a classic movie coming up. So many.
Roadhouse, 1989. We're doing it before we get the new remake version of it, the Conor McGregor, Jake Gyllenhaal prime version of this. Yeah. But this is the original, the OG from 1989, starring Patrick Swayze in one of his most iconic roles.
It was awesome to go back to this. I hadn't seen it in so long, and I think, like, I'm really excited for the new one. Because it can't, like, there's so much going on with this one. Just so much ridiculousness that I think you could do almost anything with the new one.
Yeah, and that's where I'm really excited as well. But I'm also somewhat hesitant here because this movie is one of the best worst movies ever made, is how I would pitch it. It's a movie where the script is absolutely absurd. Some of the quotes are like borderline nonsensical.
Yeah.
But everybody's just having so much fun. And like, actually on this watch, when I knew we were going to do this for the podcast, on this watch, the first thing I wrote down is what makes this movie so great. Because at the end of the day, as bad as this movie is, it is so much fun. Yeah. And it is so much like, this is one of the most rewatchable movies that we've done on the podcast. It's just, it's insane. Like, if I had to describe this movie, I would call this movie Cocaine the Movie, because that is what I imagine it took mountains of to come up with something like this.
Definitely. And they just squeaked in at 1989, where like it was like the end of that era, kind of. And
this exactly
couldn't have existed at any other time.
I very much agree. I'm really excited to see what they do. I'm also like a big UFC guy, and so knowing that the remake is going to be centered around the UFC and it's got Conor McGregor involved in it, I mean, Conor McGregor as the main villain in this just makes so much sense. Like, he's just such a good heel, right? Like,
oh yeah,
it's gonna be a lot of fun. So I'm glad that we're doing this one now. And yeah, this is our spoiler-free discussion of the 1989 version. So if you haven't seen this one yet, we're just going to talk as spoiler-free as possible, let you know what this movie's about and who it's for, and then next week we'll get into the deep dive of it.
Let's do it.
Cool. Let's get started with the plot.
Yeah. So 1989, Roadhouse. There's a famous bouncer hired to turn around a backwater town's bar. They're having problems with the matrons, and he just needs to come in and clean up. But in doing so, he pisses off the local rich guy, and a bunch of shenanigans everybody's kind of involved in the town. And honestly, there's just so much packed into this movie. It has the fights, the beers, the old mentor, the rich rival, girls, music, explosions. There's a monster truck. It even has the he's in the house hunt scene where, like, they're trying to find where the guy is in the house.
And right.
Man, it has everything. There's throwing knives.
Literally everything. Like, everything in the kitchen sink has been thrown into this movie. It's insane.
Yeah.
And the best part about it is, while, like I said, the script is kind of nonsensical and, like, I don't think it's a good script, everybody's just having so much fun. Everything, like, this is kind of almost peak movie in the sense that, like, this movie knows what it's appealing to, what it wants to be. It knows how to appeal in that sense, and it's just going for it 100%.
Yeah,
all throughout the movie
it stays in its lane and doesn't take itself seriously.
No.
It's got like Patrick Swayze peak mullet and
yeah.
Like overly philosophical bouncer guy.
It's basically like Patrick Swayze. I think if you're to compare Patrick Swayze, we're talking characters and people you may know now, but to compare Patrick Swayze in 1989, like, I actually kind of look at him the same way that I look at, like, Keanu Reeves in today's, like, movie kind of meta. Like,
oh,
he's
yeah.
kind of just the, you know, like, he's got the charm and the kind of that kind of cool charisma,
yeah.
but he's also, like, you know, a really great martial artist.
I wouldn't say that, but he at the time, yes.
Yeah.
In movies at the time, yes. But, like, some of his kicks are kind of funny.
But he's also just, like, jacked up to 11 compared to somebody like Keanu Reeves. And in that, like, he's just an American female sex symbol, basically, right? Like,
yeah.
Patrick Swayze is the guy. And so when we get into characters and people you may know, I think that's going to be a really interesting discussion of who this movie is for. Because yeah. Patrick Swayze, he's coming off Dirty Dancing after this movie. Like, that played a big role in his character in this film and some of the shenanigans that happened on set during this. Like, this is kind of the peak of Patrick Swayze. And then after that, the next year we get Ghost, which is like, you know, Patrick Swayze is the biggest star in the world at that point yeah. in time. It's a really cool point in his career. He also had Point Break, which is a movie that stars him and Keanu Reeves. And that's where kind of I started getting on that line of thinking about Keanu Reeves and how much of an influence maybe Patrick Swayze was on his career as well.
Interesting.
So Patrick Swayze is Dalton in one of his most iconic roles. I imagine that you're just about as big a fan as Patrick Swayze as I am at this point. Like, Ghost was one of my favorite movies of last year for the first time viewing.
Yeah.
He just makes really silly, fun movies, right?
Yeah, it's just, like, feel-good classics. Like, those are all his hits. Like, you could watch them anytime. We'll talk about when to watch them, but, like, you could just throw on any Patrick Swayze movie just for fun, and it's, like, you get a little bit of everything.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. So, other characters and people you should know going into this. So, Wade Garrett kind of plays his mentor, like you said, the kind of almost like hippie style bouncer. Like, you know, he looks like he's in his late 40s, early 50s kind of thing. Just kind of like, you know, bobbing through this world. Played very iconically by Sam Elliott.
Yeah. He's like the old version of Dalton, where like Dalton is now the top bouncer in like North America. Somehow that's a thing. And like,
he's the cooler. He's like he's above cooler. The bouncer. Like, he's, like, the guy who bounces the bouncers.
Yeah, yeah. And, so the owner of the bar comes to hire Patrick Swayze's Dalton, and he's like, why don't you get Wade Garrett? He's the best. And he's like, you used to be the best, now you are, kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. There's definitely a certain passing of a torch that's already even really happened at this point in time, like, yeah. even though maybe Dalton doesn't recognize it, because Dalton's a pretty humble guy himself. Like, he's a very philosophical, like, you know, not angry with the world. Like, he's calmed, I think, a lot from his earlier days.
Yeah, and he does, like, Tai Chi, tries to stay centered, stay calm. He knows his job. He does it well.
Yeah, exactly. Like, he's got his code, which is always fun to see a character with a code. And, like, having that code, you know, like, you can compare this to something like Heat with Robert De Niro's character. Mm-hmm. It's always fun to see a character live by a code and then be pushed and pushed and pushed up against the limits of what that code allows them to do.
Yeah, and he got a lot of that code from Wade, so their bromance is awesome.
Yeah, it's one of the cool bromances of film, for sure.
Yeah.
Sam Elliott, in like recent times, you'll have seen him on The Ranch, a TV show that's on Netflix that I didn't really love. It's kind of that 70s show, like, sequel almost. He also starred in the Yellowstone prequel, 1883.
Yeah.
I'm not caught up on Yellowstone at all, so I don't know how great it is. But, like, Sam Elliott's kind of, like, one of those guys that just feels like he should have been in every Western ever.
I know he's old, but it feels like he was born in, like, 1888 or whatever.
Yeah, and he actually, we've talked about him multiple times on this podcast already, because he also, his first appearance was in Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, which is one of my all-time favorite movies at this point, one of the early ones we did on this podcast. He also was in the original A Star Is Born, which is pretty cool, because recently had, yeah, a very critically acclaimed remake as well, right? So.
And then he's always a great character in The Big Lebowski.
Yes, yes. And that's actually, The Big Lebowski is going to come up twice in our characters and people you may know. And I was actually surprised the second time, because obviously, like, Sam Elliott, he's borderline a household name at this point.
Yeah.
But, like, as somebody who likes movies, I know who Sam Elliott is, right?
Yeah.
It was actually the big bad of the film, Brad Wesley, and his actor that I didn't put two and two together. But
oh,
Brad.
I just connected that.
Yeah, so Brad Wesley is like the rich guy that you said was talking about. Like, there's kind of, he's just kind of generic rich guy in this movie. Like, it's kind of hard to get an idea of what he does or why he's so wealthy kind of thing. It's a very iconic, dastardly rich guy role played by Ben Gazzara, who was Jackie Treehorn in The Big Lebowski.
Yeah.
Which is hilarious.
Absolutely.
He also was one of the main stars of Dogville, which is a Lars von Trier film.
Huh.
You've probably seen Dogville, actually, because that is...
I don't think I've seen Dogville.
I was thinking you might have seen Dogville because it's a Nicole Kidman film, and I know you guys are big Nicole Kidman people.
Oh, yeah. Looks like worth a watch.
Yeah, it probably is, honestly. And then the last thing that you older audiences are going to know Ben Gazzara from being a frequent collaborator with John Cassavetes, who is one of the most famous independent filmmakers of all time. We talked about John Cassavetes last year when we did The Dirty Dozen, which was an absolute blast to do that film. Yeah, so that's that. You've already talked about Frank Tilghman, the owner of the bar, played by Kevin Tigg, really doesn't have a whole lot. Like, he's got a very recognizable face.
Oh, yeah.
But really the only thing that I knew him from was the 80s film Newsies, and Jess also instantly knew him from that as well. He's a weird character, and I'm gonna wait to talk about him in the spoiler full discussion, I think, in more detail.
I want to say, like, it was like he was cast in a different type of movie. Or something like that.
Yeah, it's a performance. We'll put her that way.
I wanted to shout out to one more person in the cast, the fellow Canadian.
Yes, go for it.
Jeff Healey. He's a blind Canadian singer-songwriter, and he played a huge part in the movie, just being like one of Dalton's good friends who is the musician in the new bar that he shows up at.
Right. He's kind of also one of the, like, unsung heroes of the movie because his music is awesome and it's pretty frequently used throughout the film. Like, they're almost constantly playing in the background. I love when live bands are somehow incorporated into movies like this, and this one kind of feels like a very easy incorporation. Now, again, this is, like, I'll talk about this in the deep dive, but this is, again, like, one of those script questions that I have, like, where I'm like, so the band just plays at the same place every night, day in, day out kind of thing? Like, I'm not going to knock anybody but the screenwriters in this movie, actually. And so Jeff Healey, like, I think that I've listened to Jeff Healey a little bit more in the last, like, few weeks leading up to this discussion because he's a great performer and, you know, he's kind of iconic in Canadian blues and blues rock. And I kind of wonder how much his style of music plays into, like, one of my favorite bands of all time, the Glorious Sons, who are also kind of bluesy rock band. So I think that personally, I find his performance really great in this movie. So I'm glad that you brought him up.
Yeah, I think he killed it. And, like, as soon as I, like, saw how much screen time he got, I was like, who is this guy? So I had to actually look into it, and I was like, oh, that's Jeff Healey. Okay. And then I knew who he was.
Yeah, so we have a few other people to round out the cast as well. Like, we should talk about the two female performances, the main female performances in the movie. Kelly Lynch is playing Elizabeth, better known as Doc, throughout the film. She's the main love interest of Dalton. She's also kind of offset by the bombshell Denise, the woman who's dating Brad Wesley, played by Julie Michaels, who also appeared in Point Break. She's actually more of a stunt woman than an actor, from what I read online.
Wow, that's crazy.
And this is what I'll say at this point in time. Everybody in this movie is like a 10. Like, everybody is either an absolute 10, one of the sexiest people alive, or they're like trailer trash.
Yeah.
Or they're like a martial arts guru. And there's like no in between. And that's part of what makes this movie so great.
That's very accurate. I like that. Yeah, and Kelly Lynch was in the Charlie's Angels, like our version.
Yes, 2000. Yes. Yeah, she's like unbelievably attractive in this movie as well.
From 90210.
Yeah, there's kind of a joke about her versus Patrick Swayze's hair and which one of them had more hairspray in it throughout the making of the movie. The edge goes slightly to Patrick Swayze, but it's pretty close.
Yeah, I bet.
So we have some other kind of fun appearances in this movie. Like Keith David makes like the smallest background appearance. Like you can really feel as soon as his character shows up and is then immediately forgotten about, like how much his role must have been lost on the cutting room floor, essentially.
Yeah. And this film has a lot lost on the cutting room floor.
Yeah, it certainly does. So it's a weird performance because you're like, oh, Keith David. Because, yeah, again, this podcast, we're big fans of Keith David. And then you go, oh, my God. And then you just never think about Keith David again in this movie. John Doe is the original bartender of the film and then plays a slightly different role later in the film. He is one of the main singers of the band X, which is a apparently incredibly influential but unsung hero of the 80s and 90s rock scene. So I haven't listened to them yet, but I'm kind of interested in hearing what their sounds like. And then rounding this out, we've got Terry Funk, the professional wrestler, playing one of the bouncers, famous wrestler of like the 70s. He's kind of like the one of the main wrestlers who gets fired early on.
Oh, one of the main bouncers?
Bouncers, yeah.
Right. And then he just joins up with the other guys and he keeps coming back and getting his ass kicked. Yup. Okay.
And then Red, the guy who owns the general store across the street, he's played by Red West. And I don't think a lot of people are going to, you know, in a modern day are going to know who Red West is. But Red West is maybe the most interesting person in this entire movie. Red West was actually best friends with Elvis growing up.
I saw that.
High school childhood friend, was his main bodyguard and his close confidant. He was part of the Memphis Mafia. Like, he actually wrote a book about Elvis's drug issues like a week or two before he died.
Wow,
somebody who's very interesting to history and has had one of the craziest lives, I'm sure, of anybody in this entire film.
Interesting. Yeah, I'm gonna have to look deeper into him.
There is a whole world around Elvis that I just have, you know, no idea or concept of, right? And he, like, you know, we're a couple of generations removed from, like, the Elvis generation, so it kind of makes sense. But my grandparents would know probably who Red West is.
Yeah, that's fair. One guy that I just, like, randomly know because he's part of two other classics of our childhood, Travis McKenna. Mm-hmm. He was in National Lampoon's Van Wilder. Did you watch that?
Oh, yeah, I've seen Van Wilder.
Yeah, me and Kelvin watched that a bunch when we were kids. And then Batman Returns, he was just like a clown in the 1992 one. Just nice. A little shout out to him.
All right, who is this movie for? And does it hold up to a modern watch? It's impossible not to have fun watching this movie.
Oh, yeah. It's a cult classic for a reason. And especially with the male crowd.
It has a little bit of something for everyone, right?
A little bit, but it's mostly just for, like, the boys.
Yeah, I mean, it also has some, there is some gratuitous nudity in this, but it's pretty even. Like, we see just as much of Patrick Swayze throughout this movie as we do of any of the female cast. We'll put it that way.
Yeah, that's fair. And then, like, the fights, like, they're not super intense. It's not, like, the hardcore main, like, focus. Of course it is. It's a big thing.
There's like 8 or 9 fights in the scenes in this movie. So. Yeah.
But like,
it's up there.
Yeah. Yeah. But like, it's not, it is plot dependent and everything, but like, it is part of the main reason to watch this is like the fun fights.
Yeah. You don't have to beat around Sam Elliott's bush. Like, this is a fight movie.
Yeah.
Here's the thing is like, I would say just about anybody is going to have fun with this movie. It's an action film that has, like, over-the-top, absolute, like, sex appeal. It's got a great score that incorporates a live band throughout. Like, it's got romance, comedy, cartoonishly evil villains. and just insanely hilariously quotable lines, sometimes because of just like how nonsensical they are.
Yeah, and like they're heavily ingrained in pop culture as well.
I think the only people that I wouldn't recommend this to are like screenplay diehards. Like the plot is too absurd for me, the screenplay is bad, and that is going to like hamper your enjoyment of this film. Like, this isn't for you, because you know, it's a movie about a bouncer who takes on a comically evil rich guy in a town who apparently owns the cops to the point where he can just murder whoever he wants. Like, it's wild.
Yeah, like, he owns everything. And, like, that's kind of a classic story, too, like, where, like, there's a rich guy who owns everything. There's a lot of tropes.
Yes, and throwbacks to, like, the Western genre, especially, right?
Yeah,
like, this movie feels like it could have been made in the setting of, like, 1863 and almost been more at home at that point in time.
Yeah, it's like Dalton is the sheriff, like the new sheriff in town, and there's the old rich guy who's like, this is my town.
Yeah, like that.
Which
yeah, exactly.
He does actually say. Like, he's actually like, this is my town, and don't you forget it.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Like, it's a batshit crazy movie that's so much fun. Like,
so much fun.
The first time I watched this movie, as the credits were rolling, I laughed and said to Jess, I don't think that was a good movie, but I just had the most fun that I've had in a long time.
Yeah, I agree.
And so, does this movie hold up to a modern day watch? Again, the script doesn't make sense, but it's a blast. You're gonna have a good time.
Yeah. For anyone who's like seen like Sam Elliott as an older man, like seeing him as a younger older man, like that was kind of shocking. It was really nice. It was like, oh wow, he was still always old, but like you could see his youth there. I don't know if he was like 20 or 75 there, but
yeah, Sam Elliott's been like 47 for his entire life.
Yeah. Also, like the classic scenes, like as soon as you see certain scenes, you'll be like, oh, I know that from so many other like replications of it. Like, this is so pop culture heavy. There's certain lines and certain scenes that will just like connect like deep into your psyche. If you've been alive for the past 30 years, like you'll know, and you'll be like, this is that movie. Okay, I'm glad I watched it finally.
It's a movie that like I'd recommend most people watch at least once in their lives just for the pure enjoyment of it.
Yeah.
It's just a pure cinematic experience, really.
Yeah, pure fun.
And I know that critics skewered it when it was released, but like, and I get sometimes that's their job, but this is a movie that you have to separate your critical take on the film. And not even that, because I think this is actually a pretty well-made movie with a lot of people having a lot of, you know, again, attractive people having a lot of fun. And sometimes that's what a movie needs. And this movie has that and knows what it has and works with it.
Yeah. And there's so much nostalgia attached to it. Like, even just like when you look at what sexy used to be defined as, like super skinny women and super skinny men who were just slightly had muscles. Was like, and now we have like the over the top stuff. Like, this is like classic, and it's like manly men, but also sensitive to certain things. And yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, you brought up a good point there, right? Like, that Patrick Swayze is a naturally attractive guy who has a very toned body that, like, you can really appreciate the guy, like, a guy like that spending a lot of time working on himself. Whereas when you see like The Rock or like, you know, some of the other action stars of the last 15 years or so, like, you know, it's hard not to think about the amount of steroid use that's in Hollywood these days, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's like watching Hugh Jackman as the Wolverine just grow. Like, Patrick Swayze was like just at the end of when that was still like, he was still ripped, like he was jacked. But now we look at him and it's like, really?
Yeah, he's like early X-Men days version of the Wolverine.
Yeah.
And then, you know, we see how Hugh Jackman's transformation happens over the last few decades. So.
Yeah.
So one scene to sell the movie. What's your scene that you could share with somebody to sell them and going and checking this one out?
Yeah, so this is a movie clip. It's called Double Deuce. or as Sam Elliott calls it, double douche.
Yeah.
It's basically our first actual viewing of Sam Elliott's character, Wade. And he just comes in so suave and so cool. He is looking for Dalton, who is getting his ass kicked in the back of the bar. And he just comes in, grabs a beer. He knows what's up. Dalton's getting his ass kicked. He takes his sweet time getting out there, like says hello and like makes a few jokes. And then the guys who are beating up Dalton turn around and they're like, "What are you doing here, old man?" And he's like, "I'm about to show you." Like, yeah, he just goes off, does his classic move that he passed down to Dalton, where he takes out the real big guy's knee. And yeah, it's just like such a good introduction to like the overall vibe of the whole movie.
The actual quote there that I think you were looking for was when the biggest guy in the fight looks over at Sam Elliott's character, Wade, and says, "You want to fight, Dickless?" And Wade Garrett says, "Well, I ain't going to show you my dick." And then, like, just nutshots him real hard.
Yeah.
It's great. It's just so funny. And I actually had the exact same scene as you. Like, I kind of had a toss-up. There was another scene that I was thinking, but what makes this scene so great is it starts to show some of the bromance between Sam Elliott and Patrick Swayze's character, because that's part of the reason why this movie is so great, is those two actors really interact well with each other. They have a lot of on-screen chemistry together. It's got the fights that, you know, we were looking for, that this movie is purely about. It's got the silly lines, like the cheesy lines of dialogue like that, that don't quite make sense, but they're uttered in such a way that are like really, really well done, that stick in your head, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Really, the only part that's missing from this is like some absolute bombshell actress in the background. Like, that's the only part of this. That's the thing. What makes this scene so great to show to people is that, like, it's got the male sex appeal. So if you're a woman and you're watching it, you're like, "Oh, Patrick Swayze." And then you're like, "Oh, Sam Elliott."
Yeah.
And then as a guy, you're like, yes, like this is pure just testosterone being thrown around for like 2.5 minutes.
Yeah.
And so I think that's what makes this scene so great to sell the movie, is that it incorporates both of those aspects into the scene. It knows what the audience wants, and it's willing to be an active participant in that. As soon as you're on board with that, oh boy, there's so much more to see.
I loved how much respect they have for each other, because they're both the coolest coolers or bouncers in the business, and they know each other's like toughness, their grit. So there is that, like, oh, Dalton's getting his ass kicked, I'm just going to throw in a few funny lines here, set down my beer, put my hair up, and like take my time, and then I'm going to come in and save him. Like, it's not, there's not a rush in the world, and it's just like, I know he can take it.
Right. He's just kind of, cool, calm, collected kind of thing, assessing the situation and then in. When to watch, like you said, like you could probably put this on at any time. For me, this is a Friday night movie, like in its purest form. Mm-hmm. I like this as a double feature. Like, I actually watched, so I watched this movie and then immediately after, like this felt like my teenage years, honestly. Like, just putting on some like 70s, 80s movie that you don't have to think too hard, that you're going to have a good time with. And then I paired that up with Death Race 2000, a 70s movie that's also kind of an exploitation, low-budget flick, pretty action-packed as well. And I had a blast. Like, it was just a good, solid movie night. Like, just two, like, hour-and-a-half, two-hour kind of movies that I just kick back, have a drink, and have a good time with.
That does sound like a great double feature. And yeah, like the high school throwback. I remember watching this when I was first being introduced to marijuana. And that's why I didn't remember too much of it so this was a really good rewatch for me.
That's hilarious. I'd actually hadn't seen this movie until about 3 or 4 years ago when the remake was announced. It was about around then, and it was during COVID. And Jess and I were just sitting down one night, and I was like, "Oh, I kind of want to watch Roadhouse. I have never seen it before." And so we watched it, and we both had a blast. So,
yeah, the classic thing that, like, from our generation where we knew about it was Family Guy, like Peter kicking his his wheel and driving, and just be like, "Roadhouse."
Yeah.
True. So again, like, that was like pure high school stuff.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. So where to watch right now? This is streaming on Prime. So I imagine it'll continue to keep streaming on Prime. So by the time this episode comes out on Thursday, the new movie will be out. So you kind of have your pick of which one to watch first. I think you and I are going to check the movie out when it comes out and then do a quick review episode, maybe a bonus episode later on next week after we've both seen it. So I'm really excited to watch it, like, honestly. Yeah. It has such weird shoes to fill, right? Because it's not a movie that was done really well that technologically just didn't work back then.
Mm.
But it's also not, like, such a bad movie. Like, it's not a bad movie in the sense that it's not enjoyable and it's getting remade into, like, a good movie. So I'm really interested to see what they do, right? Because yeah,
it could be much worse while still being, like, technically a better movie.
Yeah, exactly. That's the real fear, right? Is that they try to make this movie good and in that lose the vibe of why this movie works.
I will say I trust Jake Gyllenhaal to do the best he can. It all depends on how they edit it and cut it and all that stuff too.
Jake Gyllenhaal's career over the last like 10 years has been
awesome.
Really fun for like anybody who's kind of like a little bit of a movie nerd.
Yeah.
Like he's done like Nightcrawler. He did The Covenant last year. Like he's been a lot of fun to just be a fan of over the last like 10 years or so.
Yeah, definitely. And him being attached to this makes me feel so much better about this remake. If it was like some random person or just MMA people or anything else, I wouldn't really trust it, but he puts himself into the movie, dissolves himself into the essence of the movie and goes right for it for the majority of his movies, to the point where I am actually looking forward to this, because we are in a time of remake after remake after remake. And like, mm-hmm. It's hard to get excited for some remakes, but this one I'm looking forward to.
I'm slightly optimistic going into this one. More optimistic than I usually would be with any sort of remake.
That sums it up.
Yeah, so looking forward to that episode. We've got the deep dive next week. And so at some point during this discussion, we will also release that bonus episode. So stay tuned for all of that fun stuff coming up.
Yeah.
Tell your dad.
Tell your dad. Also, I have a question for you. Does a hobby horse have a wooden dick? Well, that's one of my favorite quotes. I just want to slip that in there.
I ain't going to show you my hobby horse dick.
Get out of here, all Sam right. Elliott.
I have less than 10%, less than 1% of the charisma that Sam Elliott has in this movie.
Oh, yeah.
You agree.
I agree.
All right. See you next time.